so many controversial topics on this show, we're going to discuss something different. Climate change. Let's talk with Dr. Hugh Ross on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
We're so glad you're here. You always have a place at our table. Albeit the table spread out all over Central Florida. The name of the program, Steve Brown, etc. And I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Our favorite mega church pastor, Zach Van Dyke, is here. Zach's been listening to the revival of the musical Oklahoma. Zach, you do know that's not the kind of revival we're praying for, right?
right. It's like, you know, oh, what a beautiful morning. Every morning, it's the same thing over and over again.
And Jesus is the reason, right?
Right.
Just checking.
Yeah. Because Disney's closed.
Yeah. That's right.
I did drive there yesterday just to see it, and it was so sad.
Hey, homage.
Did you really?
I did.
Oh, there's the window just
there. I may drive down there and look at it, and it'll be the nicest I've ever looked at.
Right.
I'm with Steve on that one.
Matthew Porter's with us. Matthew believes global warming happens when people burn calories. I'm proud to be a part of the solution.
Let it begin with me.
And our producer, Jinx, is eating. He's working hard in his little glass booth. If you didn't know, by the way, Jinx has his own business. They do IT support, installation, AV production, and installation. You can find it at jinx/IT.com. Not slash.
Dash.
IT.com.
Or go to Steve Brown.
Jinx and I have a deal for any business he gets as a result of pushing his business. I get 10%. I thought honesty required and authenticity required. That I tell you that. Our video director, and you can't see him, that's because he's hard at work. John Myers is in his tech bunker. John's looking forward to Memorial Day when he can stay home. And of Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. George just gave a commencement speech to graduates titled, "If you think 2020 is disappointing, just wait." And of course, Kathy Wyatt is the soft, feminine side of the program. Kathy's unfortunately sick. She's sick of this quarantine. I know, but I didn't write it. I just read it. And I'm not going to name names of the one who wrote it.
I will. I'm happy to name the name.
Our guest is one of our favorite guests. We hardly ever understand anything that he says, and we have to caution him to get the fodder down low. He has done that on previous occasions, and I trust that he will do the same thing on this occasion. Dr. Hugh Ross is an astronomer, a teaching pastor, and the founder and president of Reasons to Believe. Dr. Ross has addressed students and faculties on more than 300 university and college campuses in the States and around the world. And his latest book, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is Weathering Climate Change, A Fresh Approach. And I have an advantage on everybody else on this. This book just came out. And when I went to get it at Kathy's house and took one over to George, I said, didn't we interview Dr. Ross on this? You know, we do so many of these, it fades. And besides, I'm old. And she said, no. And I said, well, it sounds familiar. And she said, that's because you read the manuscript and wrote a blurb for it. When you're old, you do the best you can. And I'm working on doing that. At any rate,
Dr. Ross, we don't let him out very often.
Steve, were we all there in your imagination when you gave the blurb for that?
Well, and there were four or five others, too, manufactured friends, which I have to do, imaginary friends, which I'm surrounded by them, too. I don't want you to think anything's wrong
are
with me or I'm losing.
They spirits.
Anyway,
has God sent angels
book.
To stand around you when you're lonely?
Oh, that kind of spirit.
If you think I'm crazy, you don't
yes.
know. Hugh Ross is crazier than I am. He's already got a list of enemies so long you wouldn't believe it. And with this book, he's going to add to that list. Because he goes after everybody. If you're on one side of the debate and you believe that this climate change thing is nonsense, boy, are you going to be offended. And if you're on the other side of it and worship at the God there and have made a religion out of it, you're going to be sending Dr. Ross a lot of angry letters. Hugh, I don't know that you pleased anybody but me with writing this book.
Oh, but I pleased you. I think that's enough.
That's not going to help you much. That means you get my enemies, too. But at any rate, this is a great book, and it is extremely detailed. There are billions of footnotes and sources, and it's everything you wanted to know about climate change from one man that you can trust, and I trust Hugh Ross. He takes something very complicated, and he doesn't make it uncomplicated. This is a book you have to stay with, but you'll understand and you'll get it. All right, Hugh, who do you want to offend first?
Well, you set it up quite well. My real goal in writing the book is to take the politics out of the debate.
And that's new, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, that's why I wrote the book.
People become serial killers over this issue. And, sometimes some of the things that I read on both sides sound so scary and angry that it's hard to discern what's really going on. So maybe you'll fix it, Dr. Ross, but I wouldn't hold my breath if I were you.
Well, my all goal right. is to turn all my enemies into friends, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you have a tendency to do that. I have a tendency to cause them to go get a gun. Is this stuff real, climate change?
Well, I'm glad I waited to bring up the book to the time I did, because what's happened in the last 18 months is we now have, for the first time, really reliable temperature records for the past 10,000 years. And it reveals that the climate stability that we thought we had is four times better. We used to think, well, the global mean climate's been stable to within plus or minus 2 degrees centigrade. With the new temperature measurements, we now know it's stable to plus or minus 0.65 degrees centigrade. We've been enjoying an incredible, an amazing period of extreme climate stability. And what I do in the first part of the book is say, why? How did we get such extreme climate stability? And the amazing thing is we get it right in the middle of an ice age cycle. An ice age cycle drives climate instability. We're talking plus or minus 15 degrees centigrade on timescales of just a few centuries. And that explains why humans living during the last ice age were not able to launch civilization. The climate was so extremely unstable, they couldn't do it. On the other hand, if we don't live in an ice age cycle, we can't feed billions of human beings. We need that ice age cycle to be able to sustain a large population. The amazing thing is, right in the middle of an ice age cycle, we got this 9,500-year period of extreme climate stability. And I'm hoping people will realize that this is not the norm. It's the exception. It's a gift. And when that kind of drives the question, why did God bless us with this period of extreme climate stability? And what should we do with it?
Oh, man. That's and I know what you say about God is also true about the universe when you talk about it, that we're the earth is in a very rare place, and it was placed there and held there by the same God who has overseen climate change.
That's true, but we're living in a very narrow window of time where we not only have extreme climate stability, we have no nearby supernova. I'll stop.
Okay, we'll continue. You guys, this is one place where you're going to get the truth from a man who knows. And if he can say it in a way we can understand it, you'll finish this program knowing what this thing is all about. And you might even worship the God who controls every bit of it. The book, Weathering Climate Change, and it is a fresh approach. But this approach is rather difficult. It stretches our brain, works our muscles, so we're going to take a break, and we will come back in a moment.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
You're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and we're talking with Dr. Hugh Ross. His latest book is called Weathering Climate Change, A Fresh Approach. Hugh, on the other side of the break, I had brought up how you had talked about the earth being in a very special place, the reason we could have life on earth, because God has planned it that way. And if we moved a little bit to the left or to the right, we would all die. And that's true of climate change, too, isn't it?
It is, and it's not the only window. I mean, we're in this very narrow window, only 9,500 years wide, where we got this extreme climate stability, where we're in the middle of an ice age, but also happens to be identical to the very narrow window of the sun. The sun has an extreme stability in its luminosity for only a 90,000-year period. And the amazing thing about the past 10,000 years, there hasn't been a single major solar flare. And it's also a window where we've had no nearby supernova eruptions. There were plenty during the last ice age, but none during this period of extreme climate stability. And those are three of about 20 narrow time windows that simultaneously line up. And of course, I'm arguing this is no coincidence. This is part of God's design to enable us to have billions of human beings on the planet with the civilization and the technology that we can take the good news of salvation to all the people groups, not in billions of years, but in only thousands of years. Hmm.
In the first segment, Dr. Ross, you had mentioned that we now know more reliably that there has been climate change but it was to a lesser degree, lesser range than we originally thought. Is that correct?
That's correct. We now know it's four times more stable than what we thought 3 years ago.
So does that mean that, is it kind of like a burden off our shoulders of like, oh, okay, this is not as dramatic as we thought it might be, or that does not mean that at all?
It's the opposite. It's way more dramatic than we thought. And it's like, wow. I mean, if it's that stable, there's got to be something going on to explain why it's so extremely stable.
That's interesting.
So can you, just to follow up with that, can you explain what has changed in the last 3 years? Like, how did we get new information that made that clear?
Well, it's a group of scientists that basically looked at 74 temperature proxies because, you know, we've only had thermometers for the past 150 years. And so what we need is what the temperature was like for the past several thousand years. And we've been relying on, you know, polar and Antarctic ice cores to determine the temperature. We now have 73 other tools. And by looking at these 74 proxies and integrating them, we actually get a much more reliable read on what's been going on. And also, we astronomers understand that if you look at what's happening naturally, it's dramatically cooling the planet. And so what stopped us from going into a deep ice age a few thousand years ago was the fact that the climate briefly stabilized thanks to an asteroid hitting in northwestern Greenland. It took this giant asteroid to bring about this period of stability. And then what happened is that we humans launched civilization, and the launch of civilization began to warm the surface of the Earth. And the human activity that was warming the planet balanced off the natural cooling and balanced it off so well that over the past 8,700 years, the global mean temperature very gradually and steadily declined by only 1 degree centigrade. But what's causing this controversy in the last 70 years is jumped up by 1 degree. So now the temperature is just as warm as it was 8,700 years ago. And of course, the concern is if a human civilization technology continues to exponentially increase, we might take it up another degree or two. And what we notice in looking at the ice age cycle, every time the global mean temperature hit 2 degrees centigrade above where it is now, we rapidly dropped into an ice age. And for the first time, we know why. Because when the global mean temperature rises that high, you melt the summer polar ice cap. And that ice cap reflects sunlight with 60% efficiency. But when you take the ice away, it reflects sunlight with only 6% efficiency. So where does all that extra solar heat goes? It goes into the Arctic Ocean. It makes water vapor, and that water vapor will fall as snow on Siberia and Canada. So that's the enigma. Global warming will bring on dramatic global cooling. And so it's in our best interest to delay the melting of the polar ice cap.
So if you guys live in Florida, want to go swimming, I'd do it today.
Today. Note to self, make sure you swim today. Dr. Ross, Steve said in his introduction of you, it was being amusing, but talking about how you could easily offend the both opposite sides of the extreme views on this issue, the people who don't believe any of it and the people who live by it, which I think sometimes makes it difficult for some people to get a really accurate picture, hence the great reason for you to write this book. But what is our, as believers, what is our responsibility, mandate, whatever term you would like to use, as far as what it is that we should be doing, what is our responsibility as far as this whole issue is concerned?
Yeah, I think what's happening with this debate is we're ignoring key biblical principles. One principle is that we humans are fundamentally selfish. So trying to motivate the people of the world to sacrifice their standard of living by a factor or two to stabilize the climate, that's not going to sell. On the other hand, the Bible tells us that we humans are to manage the planet's resources for our benefit and the benefit of all life. What's driving the climate change controversy is people telling us we have to choose between our benefit and the benefit of all other planet life. That's why I've got two chapters in the book saying these are things we can do to stabilize the global mean climate while we boost the world economy. That's a win-win. Who's going to vote against that? If we can boost the economy at the same time we stabilize the climate, everybody wins. And that's a biblical principle, that God's provided us with the resources so that we can manage the planet, not only for the benefit of the ecology and all other life, but for our benefit as well. We just need to seek those solutions.
Oh, man. Such good stuff. You got to get this book. You really do. Maybe you ought to have a study group at your church, advertise it, the truth about climate change, and study this book, and then you'll amaze your friends with the knowledge you have acquired and the depth of your understanding of the place where Christians are called. But then you're fallen to, so you probably won't. That's the old cynical preacher talking. I'm going to rest and see if I can do something about it. We'll return. We hope that you do too.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Listening to Steve Brown, etc., and one of our favorite guests, maybe our most favorite each year, Dr. Hugh Ross. And his book is called Weathering Climate Change, A Fresh Approach. By the way, this book, this is a great book for a small group study in your church. And Dr. Ross has made it so by adding questions for study in the book, which will be dynamite for a small study. And if you'd like to read a chapter and kind of get a flavor of it, go to reasons.org, and you can do that for free.
Yeah, but reasons.org/Ross.
What is it?
Reasons.org/Ross.
Okay, reasons.org/Ross.
Right.
You can get a free chapter of the book, absorb it, then buy the book, then tell all your friends and meet in your living room, keeping 6 feet away from each other as you have a discussion over climate change. Hugh, you were talking about what we could do or not do as Christians. Kathy asked you that. I think you had more to say about that.
Well, the book is filled with examples of things that we can do that will be the best for stabilizing the climate, not forever, but at least for another 1,000 years, at the same time boosting the world economy. And so I think what's causing all the controversy is you got scientists and politicians saying this is what we need to do, but what they're asking us to do is to sacrifice our bottom line. I mean, that's a hard sell. I mean, I had men sit down with my two sons and their friends and said, would you be willing to stabilize the climate for your grandchildren by lowering your standard of living by a factor of three and getting rid of all your high-tech toys? They said, well, we'd rather see the end of humanity than do that. And I think that expresses a sentiment of most human beings. So we need to find a way to motivate people economically to stabilize the climate. And just so many, here's a better way to do what you're doing that will actually put more money in your pocket. And I think what's going to be exciting about the book is the solutions I propose are going to most benefit the poor. And so I think we're going to be able to get a lot of people on board by saying, hey, if we stabilize the climate, we put more money in everybody's pockets, and we especially benefit the poor, then who's going to vote against this? And, you know, some of these things are pretty reasonable to do. I mean, for one thing, we can shrink the Sahara Desert by a factor of 10. I mean, people don't realize that at the time of the Roman Empire, what we now call the Sahara Desert, was feeding most of Europe with grain. Today, it feeds nobody. And the reason why is that people have been stripping the edge of the desert of vegetation for cooking fuel. So one radical idea I've put in the book is, let's give the sub-Saharan peoples all the kerosene they want for free on the condition they work with the rest of us to replant the Sahara Desert. And if we were to do that, that would soak up huge quantities of greenhouse gases. We would now have income from the grain that you could grow there that would be of great benefit to the people there. And it would also lower the food prices around the world. Literally everybody wins. The ecology in that area wins because now you're no longer going to have animals and plants going extinct. You're going to be able to repopulate that area. So that's just one of about 40 examples I have in the book of where we can come up with a win-win solution.
That's so incredibly good. Nobody's going to buy it because you're sane, but it makes such sense, and it's doable.
It's doable, and I think the one that might be instigated the first is that you're probably aware there's a big controversy about ranchers in the Amazon, cutting down the forest, burning the forest, and turning it into pasture land so that they can raise beef cattle. What they don't realize is the Amazon soil is so poor, you're only going to be able to do that for a few years, and then you got a desert. Instead, we need to go to those Amazonian people and say, look, leave the jungle the way it is, but harvest the jungle in a way that will make you a lot of money and stabilize the climate. Because new research shows that these old trees grow very slowly, and when they die, they release greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. We would be wise to cut those trees down. And of course, the big trees, you make a lot of money on them. Cut them down before they start decaying, sell that, and replant it with younger trees. And for every species of tree, there's a window where they grow about 2 to 3 times faster than the old trees. So that's going to pull huge quantities of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. And so I refer to this as responsible lumbering, but it's also the lumbering technique where you make the most money. Incidentally, I think we need to apply that to our national parks here in the United States. You know, as you visit these national parks, in some cases, a third of the trees are dying. We'd be better off to harvest those trees and make the forest more beautiful, but we also make more money.
That is so good, I can hardly stand it. I'll run the campaign for you to be the king of the world. We'll give you all of the power, and then maybe we could fix this thing.
Alternatively, I don't think I can handle it.
Maybe Washington will die and we can fix it ourselves.
Talk about greenhouse gases.
We're going to come back. I know you would rather we didn't, but we are. So deal with it. He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. We're talking to Dr. Hugh Ross, and I've suggested this, and I think you should go to reasons.org for a lot of reasons. Dr. Ross included a chapter in this book on the pandemic that we're facing, and his editors took it out. Steinbeck said to his editor, where the blank were you when the page was blank? But Hugh, being the kind Christian gentleman that he is, has posted that missing chapter at reasons.org. Should it be / Hugh?
No, it's just, you can go to my blog site, and it's not a chapter. What I did is created several short articles that are lay accessible on the pandemic. In fact, you'll find a whole bunch of articles on the pandemic because we have a virologist on our staff. So she's written a bunch of articles. Our biochemist has written some. I've written many on just the incredible benefit we get from viruses and how they play a role in this climate change. Viruses attack bacteria, and the bacterial particles and the viruses fall in the ocean. And as they sink into the ocean, they provide food for the deep ocean life. And when they hit the bottom of the ocean, they get driven into the mantle. So this is a way that greenhouse gases are pulled out of the atmosphere. If it wasn't for the viruses, we wouldn't have our climate stability. If it wasn't for the viruses, we wouldn't have the rainfall we need to grow all the food we do. Because viruses are little tiny particles that provides seeds for the formation of raindrops and snow.
I knew that. Zach.
Everybody take off your masks.
Oh, man. Dr. Ross, I guess because this conversation has become so political, you know, I'm just curious, like, what do you say when someone says, I just don't believe that climate change is a real thing? I think it's a political thing. Like, how would you suggest we as Christians engage in that conversation with people who just flat out say, because of the bias that's come through the political system, who just won't even engage in the topic? Like, how do you prove it to them, or how do you invite them into that conversation?
I tell them to read chapter 2. No, I've actually tested this on climate change deniers. Mm. When you actually show them the data and how we now have high quality data we didn't have before, and we got long-term data, and basically say, you know, all the attention has been focused on carbon dioxide, but that's not the only factor that's disturbing climate change. There's methane, there's nitrous oxide, there are the refrigerant gases that we use, and something that's been really overlooked is black carbon soot. I mean, the data is showing us, for example, that Canada is warming about 5 times more rapidly than the rest of the world. And it's not so much the greenhouse gases, it's this black carbon soot coming from India and China and landing on Canada and absorbing sunlight and melting the snow and warming up the climate. And I got a sister that lives in central British Columbia. She says the winters there are now 35 degrees warmer than they were 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, parts of the world are getting colder, and I think that's what's causing some of the denials, because Eastern Europe is getting significantly colder. But the best global warming models, and now we've got some fairly decent models, they actually predict that certain parts of the world, as the globe as a whole gets warmer, will actually get colder. But places like Canada are getting dramatically warmer. So if you look at the data and look at the correlations, not with just one greenhouse gas, but all the greenhouse gases and the carbon soot, I think that's one of the easiest things we can do, is that we can provide cheap energy sources where we no longer have to use coal to make electricity. That's going to do a lot to stop the black carbon soot.
Jinx?
Well, the one thing that's I'm just getting a big kick out of is the way he's talking about time and space on some of the universe stuff we mentioned briefly. Like, you know, billionaires talk about slush funds, but like 10,000 years, you said, was a very narrow time. But you know, then you throw God back in the picture and nothing's time and space are irrelevant anyway. He's bigger than all of it. But as one little human, how should we approach this when we start looking at things that to non-scientists would seem huge?
Well, I wrote this book as a tool that you can share with other people, get the conversation going in a different direction than it's been going. And, you know, I think this book is one that's very easy to get people motivated. I mean, I had a friend, for example, who's got an atheist sister-in-law who's refused to read any Christian books. And so what he did is he just sent her a snapshot of one page of the book. And she says, send me the book, I'll read the whole thing. And I'm an evangelist at heart. Mm-hmm. I write all this stuff about complex science, integrate it so people understand it. But predominantly, I want to give you opportunities to share your faith. And what a better open door than climate change. Everybody wants to talk about climate change. But we call it a fresh approach because there's a book about climate change you're not going to find in any other book. A lot of people say this is the anti-Al Gore book because it's basically the polar opposite of what you're getting from the Al Gores of the world.
George. And I guess we ultimately have to remember that God is in control of all this. So we really can't mess it up any more than he wants us to.
Well, that's true, but he's also made us responsible. I mean, that's Absolutely. Something you see in both Job and Genesis. He put us in charge of this planet. He gave all of the rich resources of this planet. That's part of what I put in the book is we need to stand back and be amazed at just the wealth that God has provided for us in this brief window of time. He did that so we could fulfill a command he gave us, manage the planet and its resources for your benefit and the benefit of all life so that you can fill the earth. God wants a lot of people to be saved, not just a small number. So he wants us to develop the civilization where we can have a large number of people who have an opportunity to enter into an eternal relationship with him. And what amazes me, we're also living in a time window when our planet has more species of life than it's ever had before. And I don't know about you, but I just enjoy being around all those species mm-hmm. and also realizing God designed them to serve and please us. So just realizing, you know, God's providence is everywhere if we just look. And I'm hoping this climate change controversy is going to get people looking in places they've never looked before.
Mm. Dr. Bingham had a wonderful question, but we're going to have to save it for the next time we have you on, Dr. Ross.
Such a good place for him to wrap it up.
What?
That's such a good place for him to wrap it up. What he just said.
It is, and we're going to back out. Hugh, as always, you blow us away. I mean, you have such balance and common sense and wisdom about these things. You take care of yourself. And if you find that you've got a cough or a fever, for heaven's sake, go see a doctor quick, because we can't afford to lose you. Hugh, thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
We're gonna come back and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. This has been a program for thought. Be sure and get the book. Read it and underline it. Weathering Climate Change, A Fresh Approach. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
We've been talking this hour, and it was a great hour with Hugh Ross. We like him for a lot of reasons. He has as you can see, and if you've read his book, his mind is something they ought to freeze and keep for posterity. It's absolutely amazing. He knows more than any friend I've got. But underneath all of that, he has an incredible passion that people see Jesus. And God has used him in places you wouldn't believe to lead people to Christ, and that's good. And we can do that too on a lesser scale. We read books from people like Dr. Ross or the late Ravi Zacharias that we're going to miss a lot. But we can get that fodder down low, and we ought to be the most balanced and the wisest people on the face of the earth. They keep calling us fanatics. They keep throwing those things at us, and we should demonstrate that we're just the opposite. We're the people who have the balance of Hugh Ross, because Hugh Ross has the balance of Christ. And when all of the smoke clears, Christians will still be here. And they'll think, what was it you said before? And maybe they'll even listen. But at any rate, get Hugh's stuff and read it. And all the staff at reasons.org, it'll blow you away. Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
I have no idea.
Well, that was helpful.
Well, look at it this way. Look at it this way. Last week, you asked me that question, and I said, I have no idea. And look what happened.
Yeah, maybe, this week we can have Al Gore.
There you go. I'll see if I can track him down.
Speaking of producing greenhouse gases.
Yeah, in his private plane.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Listen, that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Like I said last week, we're in the middle of a pandemic, okay? We're not getting regular mail delivery at the office, and
you're doing great, Kathy.
What can I tell you?
Good, Kathy.
We're not criticizing.
Look what I've got to work with here. If we can't get a guest, I've got Matthew and Jinx and Zach and George and myself. I mean, what else do you need?
You just do a giant infomercial.
Who needs a guest? Needs a guest?
Well, we do.
Guys, we're out of here, but we're going to come back next week. Same time, same place. And it's our fond hope that you join us. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. That gives you a wide, wide berth.